we're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Still weird when I do that. It always will be. Stephen Godfrey at 38 Godfrey, Richard Johnson, Alex Kirshner. I'm going to ask a rhetorical question because my co-hosts already know it. The rhetorical question is this. It starts with a statement. Labor Day weekend, in my opinion, greatest college football moment of the calendar, right? Everyone's filled with hope. Everyone's going to win the national title or have a better season than last, at least. Across Labor Day weekend, officially week one for this sport, a five-day window. There are 86 games in 2024 that feature at least one FBS team, okay? So for the purposes of today's conversation, we're going to talk about the FBS. I love you, FCS. We're going to talk a little bit about you because you're showing up too. But for those who only care about the top tier, whatever that may be moving forward, there are 86 games. God, that sounds like a lot. That means there's 172 teams playing in the categories of FCS, Group of Five, and what I guess we're, just for today's experiment, going to call the Power Four. Please just leave your comments at the door. I'm just doing this so I can organize it in a sheet. I don't care.
Leave your comments in the comments. Unbelievable.
Yes. I will not. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to toss out anything when they're like, I can't believe he said Power Four or Power Two. I just needed to organize the Google Doc.
The shell for the powerful, Stephen Godfrey.
That's right.
We have had a kind of going sort of definition of helmet games we talk about. So we're going to talk about helmet games today. Helmet games, this is the question. We're going to define that on opening weekend as a P4 team against a P4 team. Because traditionally what college football does is they either open with, they have teams open with kind of a warm-up game, a cupcake game, a contract game, whatever you want to call it, right? Shout out to Steve Spurrier. Or in recent years, for a variety of reasons, actually, I'm just kidding. It's just one. It's just money. You would have two really cool, great, classic, vintage brands. The biggest and the best of the sport play each other, sometimes at a neutral site, sometimes one and one, right? That's a helmet game. All right. You're going to hear helmet game today a lot, right? Helmet game is P4 versus P4. How many out of 86 games featuring 172 teams on Labor Day weekend? How many helmet games are there? How many P4 versus P4 games are we going to get on opening weekend this year?
I actually didn't look at the answer.
Yeah. 86 games. Did you not look at the answer?
I did not look yet. How many Power Conference versus Power Conference games week
just
one?
Just two P4 opponents playing each other.
Out of 86 games. 10.
Richard, did you look at the notes? Were you surprised at the – what was it higher or lower than you thought?
It was definitely lower. It was definitely lower.
Okay. There are, all weekend, 9 games.
Yeah.
Yo, that's pretty good. What
nine
I just did there,
that is
that's pretty games good.
That is really
the entire
good, actually.
Weekend.
think about all the numbers between 0 and 86, and I got within 1.
We're going to talk about those 9 games. We're going to talk about why what should be the greatest holiday for this sport and in a celebration of everything that we love about college football is so bad this year and maybe not as good as it should be in years moving forward. First, we're going to do a little house cleaning. This is Split Zone Duo. My name is Stephen Godfrey. That is Richard Johnson. That is Alex Kirshner. We, as always, are brought to you by our friends at Homefield, SZD20. Let's do a fit check real fast. Are we 2 out of 3? Are we 3 out of 3 today? I am... 2 out of 3. Alex, going very on brand, Pitt hoodie. I have transitioned out of hoodie season, I think, as I sort of cautiously look out this window. I've busted out all the t-shirts now. The crew neck t-shirts are at the top of the stack as I think we are done with winter in Middle Tennessee.
Nice.
Yes, well, that's why we live here. And again, there is no law keeping you in Brooklyn. I am wearing the Suspicious, although I really like it. I call it Suspicious because this is the K-State shirt, and I have to go all the way back in frame, all the way. The reason why it's Suspicious is that I have once been told in a coffee shop here in Nashville, oh, I went to Northwestern too, which
God,
if you work in the
good
field of media,
God,
you don't want to fucking
good.
Dude, you don't want to fucking hear that. You want to talk about just like assault out of nowhere. Like I had earbuds in that day and I'm like sitting there typing. I had this shirt on, had like a cardigan, the Matt Ufford brand cardigan over it. and I'm typing and someone just went like, oh, hey, I went to Northwestern too. My favorite part of that is this is clearly not the Northwestern color. And that is what I would expect from a Northwestern graduate. So SCD20 is the code as always. They are wrapping up, I think, a bunch of basketball deals. How does anyone, was anyone else really tempted just to buy Indiana State gear?
The blue is good.
I have such a tiny buy-in to basketball in general, but like the color combination with the whole, they got slided, they got sent to the NIT. I know they lost in the final to Seton Hall, but like that was very, very tempting. Second sponsor, Go Tree. That's right, Sycamores.
That's right.
Our second sponsor is Nokian Tires. Let me tell you a little bit about the next generation of safety. I'm just going to do a straight up mea culpa here. Shout out to our friends at Nokian. The next generation of safety sent me four incredibly effective, brand new, modern, it's their best line yet of truck tires. I was not prepared at the moment to get the tires on my truck, but because spring has finally come around for some upcoming content that we're going to be doing with Nokian, I am excited because this week, finally, I'm going to take a stack of lovely Nokian tires off of my back porch. I do live in Tennessee. And put them on my actual GMC Sierra next week. So I'm very excited about that. So that will be full family coverage. The two vehicles, eight tires, all Nokian. Greatest endorsement in the world. And of course, our friends at Homefield love it when I talk about how t-shirts are great, but tires save children's lives. www.splitzoneduo.com is how you support this endeavor. First and foremost, you can become a subscriber today. And we have, we were actually just discussing this before we went on air, boys. We have a log jam. That log jam would imply negativity. I would just say we have a bounty of content coming up. We're going to do an early April version of Coach Gossip. We're just going to clean up the shavings that were left on the floor from 2023, but position them in an interesting way because, well, there's stuff to talk about, and I'll leave it at that. We also have a variety of other kinds of content coming up. Richard, it's approaching draft season. I have at least one, if not two, single wings on deck. What am I missing here, Alex? We have a very meta show, as you described it, about how we cover and sort of synthesize the information that we use on the show. And then there's something else too, right? Alex, don't we have more shows?
Going to be a little bit of history class this week.
That's right.
Because you also get the Split Zone Duo newsletter, which is going to cover a different kind of Arkansas-Kentucky coach maneuvering than the big news this week between John Calipari, Arkansas, and Kentucky. I'll leave it at that, but I've already kind of previewed it if you follow me on Twitter. Excited to write about the long, long, long history of Arkansas exploring the poaching of high-profile University of Kentucky coaches, but not doing it as successfully as they've done here with John Calipari.
Alex, if you are currently a Split Zone Duo subscriber at Substack, via our friends at Substack, or you're just joining the party, we have a little bit of let's call it a logistics update, and we're going to try and do this succinctly. There's going to be information in your feed about this. You should be receiving an email, but this is also just a cover basis as we try and make this experience better for you, regardless of what audio platform you might be on and or video for that matter too.
Yeah, you will get an email about this if you are on our email list at splitzoneduo.com. If you fast forward through ads, pause for 1 second. This is very good news, and I'm going to
be. It's not an ad.
This is for our listeners, and I want to kind of update you on some things that we are rolling out today, this week, in April, to make your experience with us better. Four things. First one, an all-in-one podcast feed with free and paid episodes together. Previously, you had to carry two different feeds to support us and listen to everything. Wasn't great. Didn't want it to be that way. No longer the case. The setup is literally nothing. If you are already a paid subscriber, you do not have to do anything. There's a little bit more context behind that in the email that you will receive. But you are now going to be getting, if you are a subscriber, the paid and the free shows in one feed. Hallelujah. I am as happy as you are. Premium episodes, the paid episodes for subscribers, are now on Spotify. You can listen to those subscriber-only shows on Spotify in the same feed where you currently get your free episodes. Extremely easy to set up. You see a lock button. You tap it with your finger. You do it from there, or there are some instructions that we will email you if you want to do it via Substack's platform. YouTube Music is a new podcasting app that Google is using to basically replace Google Podcasts. I know a lot of you listen on Google Podcasts. That's going away, being sunsetted. We are on YouTube Music. Find us there. I've toyed around with it. It seems like a good podcasting app. I have enjoyed my limited experiences with it so far. Also, customized email options. We do newsletters. We do podcasts. You can now decide if you want emails for some of that, all of that, none of that, et cetera, in a way that we did not offer customization before that. So we're really excited about this. All in one podcast feed. Get everything in one place. We are on Spotify with the premium shows. We're on YouTube Music, and we've got some little email notification stuff for you as well to make your experience a little bit better. Very excited about it. Check your inbox or go to splitzoneduo.com and you will see all the information there. Very exciting stuff.
It is, I will add this, it is faster to alert us of something, ask us a question about show publication or, hey, there's a feed issue, whatever. If you use the Substack platform, because they are our distribution partners, there are little like comment sections, feedback sections for everything that we post. And then also there's direct chat, I believe. I just started messing around with the direct. You can direct message us. If there's something going on where it's like, hey, this didn't show up, or hey, I have a question about this. Asking us on social media platforms
like Twitter
is probably going to either slow us down or slow the process down, or we might not see it as some of us migrate away from that particular platform. X. I said X in a meeting with these two, like 2 months ago.
Enough.
But I did it to be sort of like very dry and ironic. And there was a visceral reaction. It was the tiniest little troll where I said X. Like, obviously, the funny thing is, like, when you say X, that's it. There's no flow to that, right? Like, you have to be conscious of doing it. And I did it once, and I think it was Richard first and Alex second, where it was as if, like, I sneezed on them. Like, one of those sneezes, like, you feel the person's fucking spit on you. Anyway, use the Substack platform.
This is good news. If you are not yet a paid subscriber, we of course hope to get you in time. You will just notice that in the same feed that you're listening to right now, that you will see short previews, free previews of the premium episodes. And if you should join us as a subscriber to Split Zone Duo, you can very easily set up your own private RSS link to get everything in one feed, just like our wonderful subscribers do now. So hit us up, not on social media. Very excited about these changes. That was a lot of housekeeping. Godfrey, very excited to talk about week one.
Well, we'll see. Remember a couple weeks ago when I was diagnosing the playoff expansion and everyone got their jokes in about like, oh, look who's being positive. Your boy's back. I'm gonna be real about this for a second. A little bit off note, although I think I wrote this in what Alex and Richard can see here as we present this. Every February, I think my seasonal affective just bottoms out. And I just get sick of the weather, all of it, the vibe, it sucks. And there's this double-edged sword when you work in college football. You very much appreciate a good long off season because you operate at a pace in season that makes you exhausted. So you don't want to rush through the off season, but you do have a sort of positive emotional and social connections to, I don't know, Labor Day weekend or Thanksgiving weekend or a nice brisk day in October when you have five great ranked matchups. Those are like, that's dopamine and serotonin, just a little pop of it. And you know, it's like late February and you're looking outside and you're trying to, you know, summon the will to go on. So I had this tradition. I actually used to make a blog post, sort of not like a big feature thing like I used to do at SB Nation. I would just drop a blog post about that time every year, usually in January. And I would be like, hey, these are the 10 best games in game one. It's absurd to talk about this because we're 8 months away, but I would just do that for fun. And I remember like Jason Kirk thought it was fun and it was like, all right, you know, you got this long desert of an off season. So was having a February Tuesday or something recently. And I decided, I was like, all right, well, let's see what Labor Day weekend's going to look like. Let's see what's going to happen there. What's going to be fun. Should I go cover a game out of town? Let's talk to my boss at the Post. You know, there's this VTech Vanderbilt game we're going to talk about in a second. I was like, that's in Nashville. The first thing I always do, and I don't know if you guys have this tradition, I don't know if it was more rooted in my age, was I would look at Thursday night. Because for a long time, as college football started its sort of cable identity of having so many games on across platforms, Labor Day would spread to a five-day event for the debut of the season. And there was usually, for lack of a better descriptor, a banger on Thursday night to open the season. Now, a banger does not mean like number one versus number five necessarily. A banger is just something that drew interest or quality. And we'll get to that in a second. What I immediately noticed on the 24 schedule as I went through after all this realignment and all this focus on television product and ownership was no banger. And the other issue that I was like, all right, well, this happens sometimes. You know what? ESPN hasn't announced what they're moving to Thursday night yet, because that's very, very common. Well, again, well, you know, we're going to get to a couple examples of this. Those of you who subscribe to the SEC network right away, you remember they moved a conference game to week one Thursday night specifically to like hold the cable networks hostage. There's no banger. Now, this is not an insult to North Carolina and Minnesota, which is one of the nine games total that feature two P4 teams. But the scary thing, and the reason this became a show topic that I'm bringing you guys today, is I can't find a game to move because the inventory is so bad. Because
they all suck.
I'm actually like, I laughed about it. And then I thought like, man, fuck this, because this is like, and this is not me doing a bit. This is like, Thanksgiving's my favorite holiday. Purely for food. Actually, Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. One, for the food, and two, for the things you don't have to do on Thanksgiving because I'm a father of three. Like, Christmas is stressful as fuck. You know, like, you don't want to blow anyone up on the 4th of July. Thanksgiving is, we're all going to watch football and eat the best food that we can make. I mean, that's the most American holiday. Labor Day weekend is my sports Thanksgiving because it should be a national focus on college football for 5 days. I know you have like MLB pennant races.
Yeah. It grow up.
Like, well, we were subjected to that Aaron Judge home run bullshit a couple years ago. And
it was fine.
Like, it was not fine. It fucking blew.
It was
fine. I know ESPN PR listens to this. Don't ever fucking do that again. You think my post articles are bad now. So we go on, and I can't believe you're a Pirates fan. I cannot believe that you're caping for Yankees national narrative.
The Aaron Judge stuff.
Is that the last thing that America?
I am actually I'm actually more on his side than you may think. The Aaron Judge thing was actually fine, and I live here and hate the Yankees.
All right. Remember, I said nine total games earlier. There's five on Saturday. The whole day.
Love that.
All right. So now keep in mind, that's the co-host who's also like, I want more helmet games. I'm gonna pay attention to the marquee. Guy, the cafeteria is tough. Bare. Okay. So on Labor Day Saturday, on week one Saturday, we have only five games that feature a P4 helmet against a P4 helmet. And by the way, did I just mention that one of those is Vanderbilt, arguably one of the worst teams in the Power Four?
Stretching the term helmet.
Oh, big time. I'll be stretching the credulity of attending and covering that game as well, probably. 44 out of the 65 games that are being played on Saturday feature P4 teams versus either a group of five or an FCS opponent, right? That's a lot. Alex, do you have a question?
I do. It's more of a realization than a question, but I'm sitting here thinking, like, all right, Godfrey, you're like, you know, you enjoy watching group of five football. Georgia Southern was your boyhood team. Like, so like, all right, like pity, no big deal if there's not that many P4 versus P4 games, except the nature of math is that if there are not any P4 versus P4 games, then it also has to mean that there is a significant dearth of G5 on G5 games between like-sized programs that don't like each other or have history together. So it's going to burn the candle at both ends. Has to.
Yeah. It's a very good point. The problem is, as we go, because SCD is all whole hog, I immediately defaulted to, all right, well, don't be a marquee asshole. Don't be like Richard, right? Like, I love G5 football, right? Let's keep going. Hold on.
You're running into it, ain't you?
All right, so we're going to start at the marquee. We're still in Richard's territory, okay? All four playoff teams from last year are either doing an FCS or a mid or bad G5 opponent, all four. The outside contenders that were not the four playoff teams last year, like Ohio State, Ole Miss, Oregon, Missouri, they're all playing warm-up games as well, okay? So wipe that down. So I'm pulling away most of the top 10 as I'm speaking, okay? The only 2023 P5 conference champion that's playing a P4 opponent is Florida State. Good for them. On Monday night, they're playing Boston College. Fuck us. All right, so all right, one of the nine games total on the entire weekend. You ready for this banger on Friday night? That's TCU versus Stanford. No offense to TCU, who we have a lot of, I think, interest in varying levels on this program, but those are both sub-500 clubs from last year that are playing each other. Not exactly appointment viewing on Friday night. There are no P4 and P4 games all opening weekend that feature two 10-win teams from last year. So I know now what you're saying is like, again, let's go super casual. Let's play the anti-SED card here, boys. What are, there's got to be some like value in narrative in like LSU versus USC in Vegas, because that's happening, right? That'll be fun. Yeah, that'll be Sunday night.
That'll be fun, right? That'll be the one that people are going to draw conclusions from that don't exist. So yeah.
And what's the Sunday. And the second one, Richard? The second one is going to be Georgia and Clemson in Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta, right?
Yes. Yes.
They're both neutral site games. Hold that thought as we march through, because neutral site games from this guy, as I raise my hand for those of you not on video, and many other media people, might have sort of demonized the shit out of, and I even wrote a column about this for the Post last year, we might need our corporate friends a little bit more than we realize as we march along.
Just like that, he comes crawling back.
Well, I've got a solution that handles the top of it, and I've got a solution that handles the SED-ness of that as we continue into solutions. But I'm not done talking about how fucking terrible this is. What I would like you guys to do is you can scroll through your notes. You can scroll down because I broke out every single game by division for week one. All right. I want you, because this is, we're the G5 show. Fuck it, SED, right? Georgia Southern. That's what Alex said, right? I love group five, right? Right, right. I want you to find me, and I'll vamp like it's a single wing while you do it. Three interesting to watch P4 versus G5 games, and three G5 versus G5 games that you would sit and watch on opening weekend. Now, I will spot you the obvious one, which is my team, Georgia Southern, hosting Boise State at 100% humidity, I'm sure. It's going to be a fucking cut. Like, Boise might die. They're going to need those gel packs under their pads that Oregon wore in Starkville back like 20 years ago.
To pump the cold water through them.
Yeah. That's so Nike tested those for the first time ever, and it was either week one or week two in Starkville. And this is like a very long time ago, Joey Harrington era, where I was in college when it happened. So, Alex, I don't know if you, I can, yeah. It looks like you're reading. I can usually tell your reading face. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I gave you Georgia Southern versus Boise.
Yeah.
Build me that SED tasting menu. Come on, boys, let's go.
Wyoming. Right. What do we got? Wyoming against Arizona State has a chance to be funny. God, what else?
Are you going
to
watch four quarters of that?
Are you high?
Look, stylistically, it's unlikely to be good, but Miami of Ohio at Northwestern
also has a chance to be funny.
Miami won the MAC last year, and Northwestern was a significantly improved program when they shouldn't have been under David Braun. So you could maybe talk me into that.
Mm-hmm. FAU against Michigan
North
State.
North Texas at South Alabama.
FAU against Michigan State has a chance to be funny.
And what Richard is saying by funny, because I've worked with him long enough to know, is basically that the power team just holds their dick too long, and that a better organized, and I mean, like, Tom Herman's like a pretty good coach, right? Like, is that they might get a little bit of a scare because it'll be Jonathan Smith's first game in East Lansing. That's all you're saying. Absolutely. You're not saying good. Absolutely. You're not saying exciting, right? Anything else? As for six, so I think we got four.
North Texas at South Alabama,
bruh,
is
if Kane was still there,
is
okay.
All right, no, it's tough. It's tough.
Have I proved my
because
point yet?
It's tough because North Texas lost the really good quarterback.
Yes. So I tried to include that game specifically, Alex, and then you look at their rosters.
It's tough.
Oh, Houston UNLV.
It's tough.
Houston UNLV.
Yeah, Houston UNLV could be fine. Houston UNLV could be fine. I mean, okay. Miami against Florida is, you know, what it is.
That's not a, but that's a P4 versus a P4, which, by the way,
that doesn't count. Yeah.
Stellar records. Alex, also, I don't know if I put this in the show notes. One of these games is Miami versus Florida, which may or may not be America's first anxiety bowl in week one.
That is really
like, is anyone fired up about that? Let me ask the Gator. Let me fired up about that shit.
It's just gonna be. That's one of those that like everybody's gonna kvetch about it and whatever. And then at kickoff, it'll be Florida Miami games are whew. Florida State Miami games are whew. But Florida Miami, we haven't had one. There was, I think it was 2018. They played in Orlando, so they haven't played in Gainesville in a long like 2009, I think.
I have been informed that that series specifically exists for white Florida fans to be like a little pearl clutchy about the average sidewalk alumnus of the behavior, if you will. Yes. So I can't wait.
They played
for that
in Miami in like 2012. but they have not played in Gainesville in a long time.
Yeah.
Steven, I'm going to let you get to the why of this because it is it is pretty bleak.
If you have a banger, like,
but it's not a banger, but you can talk me into Kennesaw State in its first game as an FBS program at UTSA as it like just intriguing.
I tried that one too.
Because they're in different stations in life. Because
Alex, I tried to hype that on a single wing, and I got yelled at because of how bad Kennesaw State's record was.
No, they haven't been good. That's the thing. They're not coming up strong. They're coming up weak.
And then think about who you're missing at UTSA right now.
Well, yes. Right? But that's part of the interest is, like, you know, UTSA has a non-Frank Harris quarterback for the first time since, God.
The Reagan administration?
It's been a minute.
Since they had a football program?
Point is, you have convinced me, Steven, that this is...
It's unacceptable.
Let's just be honest about it. This is a shocking dearth of quality games in week one. Shocking. So, I mean, it's amazing that it was allowed to happen.
I remember better days, and this is not the kind of like old man yells at cloud thing. This like better days were like 5 years ago.
We used to have
a
remember
country. Yeah. This is,
but
yeah. You know,
I will say this. We did used to have a country. look, it's one of those where you look at week one and then you're like, what the hell? And then you look at week two and you're like, what they kind of did is spread.
Don't spoil week two
yet.
Because I know where you're going.
But what they did is like they kind of spread the wealth, which is annoying and frustrating. And I understand, Godfrey, why it frustrates you. But what they've done is kind of spread the wealth out instead of pack it in on one weekend.
So we're going to talk about the illusion of wealth between weeks one and two in a second, because I'm going to be honest with you, Richard, what they did was they spread a thin sandwich.
Thinner,
even thinner.
Yeah, yeah. They spread over two slices of bread instead of one.
Yeah. It's still bad. So Thursday used to have a banger. Like you would even have a neutral site game, sometimes ill-advised mixed results. You might have an empty Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I think my alma mater did this twice, once against Boise and once against Louisville. And they were like, 11,000 fans in Atlanta, which by the way is like that's a bloodbath in terms of like what it costs to run an event in an NFL stadium. I told the story earlier, but you know, ESPN would push way before the SEC network. Like when you guys were in college, I don't know if you remember this, but like ESPN would just put a conference game on regular ESPN with like the Jesse Palmer, David Pollack crew. Do you remember that when like Sam Ponder was the sideline reporter? They would just do like Mississippi State at LSU on a Thursday night to open the season. And it would be fucking awesome, right? If you are an SEC fan, you know that South Carolina and Mississippi State would always have some version of like a Thursday night opener to start the season. Vanderbilt would do it. When the SEC network debuted, they pushed a bunch of games to week one for political reasons. But like it was kind of great. It was kind of awesome just to have like Arkansas Auburn in week one because it's – in some ways, not better than the fun matchups that you get in week one, but it's just nice variety. We'll get into conference games and their existence in week one in a second. But then you would also have rivalries, which is going to be one of my solutions in a second. Colorado and Colorado State had a longtime contract to play at Invesco in Denver, and it would often get moved or flexed, if you will, to like Friday night on Fox. That's a like if you're out in the bars on Labor Day weekend or you're still on vacation or you're doing whatever, you're on your college campus and you're like, you want a passive game to consume on Friday night, like an in-state rivalry. That's great. That's perfect. That's what Friday night should be for. By the way, I want to officially state I'm okay with Friday night college football on Labor Day weekend and Thanksgiving. And that's it. That's it. I know that's not going to happen, but that's my stance. This might be, and this is weird for me to say this because like I'm from the Deep South. I went to an SEC school. I've lived in the Deep South or places that don't care about football at all. There's really no variance. Labor Day weekend, and Richard, you'll probably understand this, like it's always been about college football. Always. As long as I can really remember.
Well,
but a lot of people in America have traditions like we saw this at our live show in Minneapolis last year. They're like one of the reasons Minnesota opens on a Thursday night is because there is a tradition across Minnesota that that's your last weekend of the summer and everyone goes to their lake houses or lake cabins in Minnesota. And there's a lot of that across the country of like, hey, you know what? We're all going to go to the beach in the South, like, or in warm weather. elementary and like high school will start in August. Labor Day, you get off. You go to the beach.
I was going to ask you about this. When did you start school? Like as a kid? And Alex, same question.
In the DC suburbs, I started a week after Labor Day. And then in Mississippi, I started in West Virginia. I don't remember. Georgia, I don't remember. But in Mississippi, school started in like August 9th.
I was going to say, like, I used to start school like August 15th. I think it was the second or third Monday in August every year we started school.
Yeah.
Alex,
when did you start school?
I think the day after Labor Day.
Yeah, that's school. It's funny. That's Pittsburgh. Yeah. That's a wild. Northern thing.
When did
thing.
You get out?
Yeah.
Did you get out in June?
Probably like June 10th or so.
Oh, that's fucking
Oh, bro. Well, yeah, we're dusted out on like May.
Actually, it was almost exactly June 10th. For some reason, I remember that.
I used to. So it's funny. Like, I have bad news about Labor Day, Godfrey. I have bad news for the listening audience. So, you know how the NFL was kind of like, hey, Christmas falls in our season and we let the NBA.
And have fuck it. You.
What if we just didn't do that? And then like 4 or 5 years ago, they started playing more games on Christmas. And then earlier this, last year.
It was like they, 2 weeks ago.
Well,
they announced
but
right?
I'm getting to that. But last year, they said, on the record, they said, we're not going to play games on Christmas when Christmas falls on a Tuesday or Wednesday, the days that NFL games do not typically fall under. And then guess what they did a couple weeks ago when they were like, oh, we're just going to play a triple header on Christmas and we're going to farm those games out to NBC for God knows how much money. So I want people to be aware that when the NFL CBA comes up next, what's going to come up is expanding the regular season again. Yes.
Yeah.
It expanded to 17 games just the other day. Yeah. Expanded to 17 games. It'll expand probably. Again to 18 games if the owners have their way. Guess where that season's expanding into? Because it ain't gonna be deeper into January,
not
baby.
Forwards, it's backwards.
They're
it's
pushing
backwards.
That puppy forward. So get ready for Monday Night Football, Super Bowl champion against whoever on Labor Day night. So, you know, nice Labor
make
Day.
This point
nice
too.
Labor Day weekend you got there. It'd be a shame if something happened to it.
I think that a lot of the people who get mad about college football on Friday nights, not all, I don't want to ascribe bad faith to everybody, but I think a lot are pandering and trying to sound like carers and guardians of high school football. Whereas if there's actually like a huge problem for high school football attendance in this country being caused by college games being on Friday nights, I need to see the evidence, you know, like. I've turned on a lot of Friday night college football broadcasts and seen announced attendance of 30,000, but goddamn, it sure looks like 10,000 there. And I'm wondering if the high school games in those areas.
I don't think you have the light. I don't think you have any. You don't have any of the catches of life experience that would.
Well, no, I understand that. I understand that. I don't live in Texas. I don't live in Florida.
No, that's not it.
But
there's like 18 states that this applies to. It's that if you have. Again, season tickets to a school, but you have kids of high school age or junior high age, it's the conflict of the events and the inability to get off work. Like that's it fundamentally. It's not so much about the
totally
sanctity
fair.
Of
totally
Friday
fair.
Night Lights.
All right, totally fair. Good point.
It does point. Suck ass for like position coaches, but Richard has mentioned this on previous episodes. You can go look up. Like that might change in the new world order of personnel where receivers coach for your team is not necessarily beholden to being on a Friday night sideline. Regardless, as Richard is wont to do, like television is marching us forward to more Friday night college football, whether we like it or not, it's going to happen. And the main reason it's going to happen is because they're scared of Thursdays. I didn't include this in include this in the show notes, but just as an example, the attempt to sort of open college football big before the NFL shows up is that there's 16 games on this Thursday night, Labor Day weekend that involve an FBS team. If you throw in the FCSs, I want to say it gets into like the 30s. There's zero games the following week because they run and hide from the NFL. There's zero games on week two of the college football season on Thursday night because that's NFL kickoff. If you think that's normal, you're just young because that's not normal. that's only been normal for less than, I want to say, maybe 5-6 years. So the manifest destiny of the NFL, Richard, does kind of come into effect here. And I want to talk a little bit about what week zero might do. I could kind of wax nostalgic about this. I already have before, but I just think, like, as an on-site reporter, you know, doing fun stuff, like, I remember when Houston upset Oklahoma and Reliant week one, when I embedded at Georgia Southern and they went to West Virginia week one. Like, I remember not being a working member of the media and just going with my wife's high school friends to the LSU North Carolina game at the Georgia Dome and just getting getting legally questionable before the game and having a blast with LSU fans. And like, there, so I do have a really intense sort of vibe with week one and wanting Labor Day weekend to be good. I will say this because I make fun of Vanderbilt a lot these days, but some of the, like, they used to have in the James Franklin era, like, you did not want to open the season at Vanderbilt on Thursday night. Like, that was the trap game to end all trap games and weirdly a loud stadium.
I remember, speaking of that, like, I remember when, Spurrier got to South Carolina, Spurrier like invited the Thursday night opener. Mm-hmm. Like, he actually liked that.
Yes.
And yes, coaches complain about it because it pushes camp further, but whatever. But Spurrier, like,
coaches, Richard, you know this. Coaches secretly, at least when they talk to like us on the phone, they love getting camp early. Head coaches do. Assistants complain because it's less vacation. Head guys like it because it's less time away from the program. Why are things this bad this year? The short answer and the long answer are the same, and it's probably what you expect, which is that realignment specifically kind of glommed up and slowed down some of the 24 scheduling non-conference. It also postponed and moved some things around. Ironically, the best G5 matchup is just a rescheduling of 2020, which was Boise State at Georgia Southern. That was supposed to happen in week one of 2020. Obviously, it didn't. The SEC and the Big Ten, right now, it's, I want to and I will cast stones at them for probably consolidating the inventory inside of conference play and moving it out of September/late August. But you can't quite do that yet, only because they're still technically in wait and see modes, as they are basically like, they're sort of messing with their own internal schedules because of, like, in the Big Ten, you have transcontinental road games. You have the 8-9 debate in the SEC that's still going on. And also they're both still testing. And I think that, like, not, I know for a fact that not all the membership institutions in the SEC are like super comfortable yet with the divisionless structure and schedule and who they want long-term to have either a permanent 1-1 with, a rotation, or, hey, we'll see you every 7 years.
Steven, I think that you could even go farther. I think it's completely fair to blame a lot of this on the SEC and the Big Ten because of the nature of those big neutral site games that used to happen. And, well, in a couple of cases are still happening this year. But like, if you take, I'm going to just pick one out of a hat, Alabama USC at Jerry World, didn't turn out very good. USC got dunked in that game, as did everybody who ever played Alabama at a neutral site. But if you're USC, you're now in a conference where the conference scheduling is very much dictated by having certain games and teams available for Peacock at certain times of the year and shunting some things off later into the season so that you have the flexibility to align games with a streaming and broadcast centric conference television schedule in a way that just didn't exist like 5 or 10 years ago. So not only would I blame like the Big Ten and the SEC for sort of putting more teams under two tents where conference schedules need to be more purposefully crafted and where right. There is, I think, a lot of wariness about putting, you know, two of your best soldiers up against each other right at the beginning of the year. But also just, I mean, some of this might just be a streaming thing as well, because
you're kind of leading into what I think, or I should say, I hope might be the solution here. Let's talk about neutral site games for a second, because it felt like they were everywhere all the time. And we got very indie rock about how these things should happen on college campuses. And I led that charge for a long time. The truth is somewhere in between. There were, one, too many neutral site games. Two, there were not enough schools that could actually fill the needs defined by a week one neutral site game. So what do I mean by that? I mean, people that are going to put television ratings up in prime time and asses in seats in the meantime. So the one that I always go back to, and I did speak to people who work for neutral site games going into this, just as like kind of just as a heat check, like, hey, what am I missing here? Like, you know, I'm not advocating for them to come back and suck up 9 Alabama home openers again, like they did for a decade. But, you know, the joking one, the one that I'll never forget is the like the Kansas State. Oh, actually, K-State, shout out. K-State, Stanford, and Dallas. Like, guys. What the fuck are we doing? Here?
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking about a Jerry World. Like, some cities and some stadiums shouldn't host that tried to do it.
But, Godfrey, because look, you know, tough about this, but if college football does not move its week one to week zero, those NFL stadiums, a lot of them are going to be occupied on, you know, if the NFL moves its season. Earlier.
This is true, which is why I can't rely entirely on neutral sites to save us. And I don't think as we move into like what can actually make this better, I don't think it can just be neutral sites. But I do think that outside of we're going to plant a flag and have a big game at Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta, and then we don't know what else is going to happen, there might need to be like Vegas is very, very intriguing to me and the people I spoke with because it. I think it might be possible without fatiguing a fan base. And what I mean is like, I would almost set an every other year rule, an unofficial, not like on the books or anything, but let's say, so I'm LSU and I'm going to go to Vegas this year. They, I believe in 2 seasons from now are going to go to Houston to open the season against Houston in Reliant in 2026, I believe. That every other year for a power program might be the way of the future. And also there's a big fucking difference between, hey, I live in Lake Charles and I'm going to drive over to Houston for that game versus like we're flying, we're getting rooms, we're going to go see U2 at the Sphere, we're going to drop $4,000 or $5,000 on like an event, basically like a bowl style event. I think as long as you don't fatigue the programs, Vegas is appealing because you can get really anybody from across the country to come because it's a natural tourist destination. Again, if you don't wear it out, I think you could find a good television product there. That makes like Atlanta makes sense because it works. We'll talk about Charlotte in a second because this year the Charlotte game's in week 2. But I do think neutral sites need to be smarter about how they do this and include the G5. I'll tease on that. So, okay, what can make this better? The playoff could probably improve this naturally because I do think there's going to be a little bit of a move towards, hey, look at me scheduling and being able to show strength if you're debating between 2 and 3 lost teams in the seeds. We've discussed this before. I don't think we need to get into it today. If you're seeking sort of a headline game when it comes to like nut cutting time and playoff seeding, week 1 is an obvious place that you can do this. If both P2s, sorry, I said it, if both P2s go to 9 games, I'm very curious. People are going to freak out. Like, what are you going to do with those out of conference rivalries? So I'm talking about like half of the SEC off the top of my head. I'm talking about Oregon, Oregon State, Civil War. I'm talking about the Apple Cup. What if we moved a couple of those non-con rivalries like we saw with the Backyard Brawl 2 years ago to week 1? Please don't kill me in the mentions for this. What if we took the Civil War? What if we took the Apple Cup? What if we took, and don't act like y'all give this much of a shit, Louisville and Kentucky. What if
they're
we took,
already moving? Now, they're already moving the Apple Cup, I want to say.
Apple Cup, yeah. Oh, Apple and Civil War are bouncing.
Right, they already are doing that. This with Iowa and Iowa State. Iowa and Iowa State already do this. There's a couple that already do this.
El Asico is almost always week 2 or 3, but El Asico could be a great contender. Now, the reason why, I already can hear the coaches calling me, especially the coaches on the powered side, saying, we don't want this shit. You don't want this heat. You don't want it week 1. Hey, fuck you. It's a tax. Sorry. You guys, hey, Washington, Oregon, you guys left for the Big Ten. You're going to deal with your old rival in week 1 for 5 or 6 years. Fuck you. But also, who gives a shit what time of year? This is a shout out to Alex Kirshner. Who gives a shit what time of year Georgia beats Tech by 35 points?
What about, I got something for you. And I like, all right. I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but something of a college football Champions League format. Now, if you don't want to do it in the actual playoff, which none of you want to. All right, I get it. Everybody hated that idea. What about having the conference champions of the previous season play in week one. Play, now that may have to be a neutral site situation or have you, but have it be like a Champions Classic scenario or something like that, where that is a kind of ready-made big opener, and
I will bridge that into my last suggestion, which is what if we open, much like the NFL is exploring the expansion of schedule, if we opened week zero up legitimately for college inventory, what if we could somehow say in an official capacity, I don't know, maybe like a fucking governing body for the sport, could say, hey, play Southeastern Louisiana in week zero and then come and then schedule with intent for week one. What about that? So what if like Florida State's going to get one off against like Charleston Southern or something in week one, and then they're going to play a banger on, you know, Monday night or Sunday night or whatever in that week one sphere. What if we opened up week zero kind of like, you know what it is? It's a modified version of the Hawaii.
Would you proper exhibitionize those games, or would they still count?
I think they'd have to count because of the way that assuming we have some semblance of an NCAA and the structure and the competitiveness and the money, I wouldn't worry about them not counting because teams are going to go out and schedule a sub 500 FCS team to scrimmage on, you know, like Delaware State or something. There are a couple, I guess, silver linings here. Richard mentioned week two, and I want to kind of endorse and debunk this. There's a good neutral site game that is interesting in a sort of week one casual way, which is week two. Tennessee and North Carolina State are playing in the Dukes game in Charlotte. I asked why it was week two, and apparently it was their scheduling. If you would like to, while I talk about something else, Alex or Richard, look up who both of those teams are playing in week one. I don't understand it, but go with God. Okay. Another good 1-1, like the thing we want the most are those helmet versus helmet. You don't get to see it. We're going to sign a 1-1. That's what we love, right? That's what we want. Week two, we got Texas at Michigan. That's what we love, right, guys? We love that. I don't really know why Texas at Michigan is week two. Again, what I just alluded to of the having the scrimmage game, I think Texas opens against Colorado State. And I just remember that from building the schedule for you guys yesterday. And then Michigan opens against, I think, someone just sort of ish, maybe a MAC team-ish.
Well, the benefit, the fringe benefit is you get plenty. We say this a lot. You get plenty of coaches who tell you teams actually improve mostly from week one to week two because you actually know what you have. And so having your week one be a farm game and then
the real week one being week zero and then Labor Day being the showcase.
That helps, I think, that because you'll at least see them.
How does that actually materialize? Because I can totally buy that one of the reasons why this is happening, at least this year, or why in general there would be bigger games. Sometimes there'd be bigger games in week two than in week one, is to kind of give your team an ease in moment. But when you actually think about how these games get scheduled, different coaches might have different preferences around that. And these games are scheduled years in advance. Like, is it you hope you haven't, like, you might have an athletic director who's just naturally risk averse and wants to provide a buffer?
The years in advance argument has been made by the press for as long as I've been in the press. But the defense has always been, hey, you're still getting good product. You're still getting good product. This is a year where they fucked up. We didn't get the good product.
Penn State, West Virginia was supposed to be good product. Ain't good product. One good product last year. Ain't going to be good product this year.
I didn't do this, but I guess I'll go ahead and rattle off real fast before we get to the conclusion. I'll rattle off real fast the actual P4 games across the – this is a five-day span. Thursday night, you have an 8-5 North Carolina against a 6-7 Minnesota from last year. The Friday night game is TCU-Stanford. Those teams combined for 8 wins last year. Saturday, this is what you're getting – this is what you're getting excited for. We all traditionally get up. We listen to our Pat McAfee. We get really excited. Clemson-Georgia in Atlanta. Notre Dame at A&M, Penn State at West Virginia, Miami at Florida, and then here in Nashville in the Titans, legit decrepit stadium, Virginia Tech and Vandy, which is like technically a home game for Vandy. And that's Godfrey. Oh, I'm sorry. No, you get LSU, USC, and then if you want to count Florida State, BC, that's the 9 that's spread across 5 days.
Let me ask you this. Are you okay with seeding week one or seeding September really for a proper run-in in November? Think about Michigan's schedule. Honestly, I'm not even making a bit here. Think about Michigan's schedule. would you rather have pretty much all of the biggins have a Michigan-ish pacing to the schedule? Michigan may be a touch extreme because you guys know what I mean. But like,
I do know what you mean.
Would you rather,
it's very dumb and silly.
Would you rather have all the big boys have that sort of schedule so that we spend September and October figuring out what you are, and then we have a run into a playoff that you don't have to be undefeated or even maybe one loss anymore to qualify for, and then we're congealing everybody and everybody's playing their best ball at the same time or whatever, and it's sort of, frankly, like college basketball in the last 2 weeks-ish of February, and you're running into the postseason at the same time where everything
grounds. Yeah, but college basketball has a ton of early season weird fun tournaments. Sure. That's, I guess, all I'm asking for is, like, the only people I don't want to castigate here. Notre Dame actually does a really good job of, like, trying to plant a flag because they know they have a national audience. Week one, like, they're at A&M this year. They usually have a really strong opening weekend opponent. The other schools that I almost want to leave out of this of like, hey, my arms are crossed, I'm mad at you, is like, if you're South Carolina and like the SEC goes to 9 and you have to play Clemson, like, I'm not asking you to necessarily go and schedule fucking USC, the other USC, and like play it in Dallas or something like that. Like, that seems insane and extreme.
I have a theory about an impediment to this world that I want to air out for you guys, because I've mentioned this, I nodded to this earlier in the show, but it's kind of been on the back of my mind, and I've been doing like research on my side monitor while you've been talking.
Okay.
I think that and this is a Big Ten specific thing. I think it's also a Big 12 specific thing, but I'm going to use the Big Ten as the example because I can show my work on that.
Okay.
I think that as we super conference, as the conferences get bigger, and I'm even including the Big 12 in that, by the way, just like as the conferences get bigger, as we consolidate, and as at the same time, these leagues get into partnerships with companies with streamers, ESPN Plus,
yep,
Big 12, right. Peacock.
And the one-off weird Big ones 10. Like Peacock. And
I think that there are some competing considerations that probably affect week one long run to some degree, though I'm going to be curious to see how it develops. The Big 10 in the first year of their NBC deal did not put any major week one games. They did put one. It was East Carolina against Michigan on Peacock. And then they, you know, a week later, there was a Delaware Penn State game, Washington, Michigan State.
You're talking about just Peacock?
Just Peacock. Peacock exclusives.
Okay. Right.
There were no big games that were played on Peacock exclusively throughout the year. Ohio State got around to it like mid-October when they played Purdue. And Michigan obviously took the hit to do it in week one, which probably annoyed a lot of their fans. But I think that in general,
I'm holding up my four RIP,
we are going to a place where these conferences, Big Ten's a perfect example. The Big Ten is going to be under pressure from NBC Universal over time to give them more good stuff for Peacock.
Yes.
Like it's just the way it's going to go.
Yes.
Like last year,
if Peacock survives, yes.
Right. So, right. But if it's not them, it's whoever. So like last year, you could get away with East Carolina and Michigan and make a lot of Michigan fans probably mad in the first week of the season. Mm-hmm. But I suspect that Michigan's athletic department wasn't really pleased about that, right? Like I don't think that Ward Manuel was like, ah, great, I get to explain to every single fan that I meet on our caravan tours all summer that yes, to watch us in week one if you're not going to be there.
Median age 81.
Granted, people at the caravan things probably have season tickets, but you get the idea. You get tired of having to explain why your first game of the year is going to be on, you know, a streamer that people are less excited to be on, and that fans have like an access barrier too. I think that as this goes along, you're going to have like the give and take is going to be, all right, NBC tells the Big Ten, we need a little bit better here. Like we need a better game at some point to be streaming only. And they'll probably get some better games. They haven't announced what it's going to be for 2024 yet, but they're probably going to get some better games.
Okay.
And I would imagine that a few conferences and like their constituent schools will be okay playing like a higher profile game on like a Peacock, for instance. But like hell no, Michigan and Oregon are not going to play a helmet game in week one on Peacock and infuriate their massive fan bases.
Why would that infuriate the massive fan bases?
Because you don't want to sign up for Peacock. Like, yes, I mean, you will.
It pissed you off to sign up for Peacock to watch you'll do it. Dolphins and the Chiefs.
You guys were not working in the media. You guys, no. I'm sorry. You guys weren't working in the media, or Alex, you weren't working in the media when the SEC was going on radio stations and in newspapers telling people to call and legitimately harass their local cable provider
to get the SEC network.
It still happens.
I remember.
Still happens.
Peacock is a pejorative, and we like. I kind of laugh at like we're all like, oh, fucking game on Peacock or whatever. The SEC was telling people to all but take up arms locally to go like fuck with some poor guy behind a desk at like Charter Communications and fucking.
No, I agree Karen with Crow. You, Stephen. But I think my point here is that in this like give and take, push and pull that's going to happen between the conferences and their TV partners, they're going to have to put better inventory, so to speak,
yeah,
on these streamers at some point. And like, yeah, I signed up for all of them, and like a lot of people will sign up for all of them. But you don't want to be, if you're a Big Ten school, you don't want to have your bigger games being on there because it's easier for your fans. It's more access. I just think that at some point you might see these you might see the bigger brands in these big conferences acquiesce and say like, oh, okay, yeah, like one of our splashier games can be on Peacock, but we're not going to put a week one blockbuster on your little streamer where fewer fans see it.
Dude, they are putting NFL playoff games behind the paywall. Yeah. They will put whatever
they don't give a shit after
big,
that, dude.
Big difference, though. Big difference. How? NFL playoff games, you don't – NFL playoff games are scheduled 7 days in advance, and if you happen to be playing on wildcard weekend, the NFL tells you you're going and you're playing in that playoff game, and every team in the NFL makes the same exact – has the same exact voting power and gets the same exact share of their TV money. If you're like Ohio State,
but he doesn't care.
Alex, if the point is everybody has Peacock already, or at least signed up for it, like the NFL,
but we're still not there yet.
Opens. I know. I'm not saying that it's not pain. I'm not saying that it's not annoying. I understand what you're saying.
It's not like why you accepted by me by us,
Alex. What you are not acknowledging is this is part of the hazing process of getting people to fucking deal with it.
Like, I understand that, but look, here's something that you're not understanding, in my opinion. It is NBC's job to do the hazing. And if you're Ohio State and the check is going to be.
No, it's not. It's the conference's
job. And the same. I don't know, Stephen.
The Pac-12 almost forced an entire league to sell Girl Scout cookies.
But you are already seeing, though.
I can give you the comms number at the SEC.
You are already seeing, and this happened last year, like Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan, bigger brands in this conference throwing their weight around and saying, no, we're not going to do these night games at this point in the season. And I think the same kind of dynamic
because of Western bullshit. And guess what? But TV will tell them to do it, and they will do it.
The same dynamic, though, I think probably dissuades some loading up of week one, because I really do feel that if you can convince
– But week one was loaded up. This is the whole point of the show. I think going forward. No, I'm just saying that, like, you've been locked in on the streamer. And there's one thing that I would add, just like not to –
it's kind of conference politics.
Alex, streamers might not make it the way that we're talking about them.
Not all of them are going to make it. I mean, there's no chance. Yeah.
So the inventory is more important than the platform. And that's been the sea change in the last three business quarters. Like, as someone who reads Deadline every day, it's bad right now. Let's think of this as a TV product and only a TV product. So let's think about Hollywood for a second, like how they're programming and slating this kind of stuff. The idea was to just maximize volume on inventory to move people to sign up. But once the profit margins flipped, essentially, profitability, that combined with the minor recession, COVID, and interest rates, a couple other things, and I don't want to turn this into a fucking economist podcast all of a sudden, but streamers suddenly were then throttled to make things profitable. 47 of like the 50 highest rated television events in America last year were sports, live sports. And so we might see a migration to something that we can't really define yet in the next 5 years, of some sort of like people have joked, like, oh, cable's coming back. Like, Yes and no, in that you are going to have to make things a little bit more linear. So to your point about you're talking, I guess we're getting into some sort of weird argument I didn't expect on like,
no,
week one's going to be affected by conferences fighting networks. Conferences don't fight networks.
No, but teams fight conferences.
Work for
correct.
What's that?
But you're correct. All right.
Show me a positive example, a positive successful example of a team fighting a conference and winning?
Check in on Florida State and Clemson.
Sure. Did you see any night games in November at Ohio State, Michigan, or Penn State last year?
Do you think that's going to last?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
That's wild, to be honest with you.
No, this is my point.
No, I was just saying.
I've taken us on a long journey.
Like,
yeah, that's wild.
Ohio State's going to end up hosting a first round game in the cold and probably the dark. Yeah. And you know what they're going to tell them? Fuck off and do it.
Well, the playoff might, but the Big Ten probably won't. I don't know, Stephen. I've taken us on a long kind of
thing here
that I did not intend to, but all that I will close with is that I think that as conferences are pressured by their TV partners, and they do agree to do it, to put better games on these streamers, in the case like the Big Ten, for example, I think that there's always a give and take between the most powerful members of a conference and the conference office that does the scheduling. And I am highly questioning that you will see blockbusters in week one.
But didn't Michigan host Notre Dame under the lights in week one like 6 years ago?
No. Yes, but I'm saying blockbusters in week one that get shunted to streaming. Yeah, and because the streamers are going to want – and because more of these streamers are going to want those good games, it's like, okay, so you play it in mid-September.
But I guess what I'm trying to tell you is, one, this isn't about that at all. And two, the streamers are not actually the power – they're not the ones holding the power. Streamers all work for corporate – they are an arm of media
just
entity.
Pretend I said NBC, not Peacock. I mean, I understand that.
Right. NBC is always going to put – like there was this goes back to the SEC network thing that Richard and I were trying to talk to you about, which is like there was a lot of sort of stunt scheduling to get like to make you get Peacock, to make you get Paramount, to make you do some of these more like ancillary apps. That's not going to last. Those apps are folding. And remember, we're also waiting to see what happens between this Disney, Fox, possibly NBC like co-branded streaming thing that may or may not pass antitrust. Like, though, again, don't look at the landscape right now, because the contracts are going to be the contracts and people are going to be beholden to a company to make the best money. To try and wrap this up, what ultimately would quote unquote save this or fix this is if we turn in bad viewership in week one, which I kind of think we're slated to turn in some bad viewership. I think Sunday night is going to be great. You're going to pop a really good primetime number between LSU and USC. And then I think you're obviously going to see this sort of standard numbers that you would see from a Georgia Clemson game, et cetera. I think overall viewership is not going to be great for this. And that eventually what's going to happen is that the true powers here are the people writing the checks for billion dollars. And if they see a decline in viewership because of quality of inventory, they're going to go to the provider and say, make better inventory, which is actually sort of what we're hoping for. That's the conceit of this episode, is that if we are going to live with all the concessions that we've made to television in college sports, and we've made a lot, right? We have to talk about Rutgers like they're real. We should be rewarded with good, like, hook us up. Like, dude, we've all seen WALL-E, like, hook me up to the thing and I don't move for 5 days and you spoon feed me the good content because I'm handing you my dollars and you're the corporate overlord. What I don't understand fundamentally is that we made all these concessions to television and this is bad television. It's not horrible television. There are going to be some good games, but this does not compute in my mind to all the concessions that we're making to TV. I kind of thought they would trot out like, all right, we have a 16-team SEC now. Like, we're going to take a cool game like Richard, does Florida play Oklahoma this year?
Pretend they do. But yes, I get what you're saying. I think week one. I think part of what I was talking about earlier, it was the last thing I have on it. I think part of what I was talking about earlier might be more of the way of things, where you jack it closer to the end of the season than you do the beginning, because what you do control, what you can control as a conference office, is your conference schedule, because they don't set those that far out. And so you can tweak and change.
Yes.
Like, you know that week, like.
So we're just talking about moving conference inventory up,
sure,
right?
Like Pac-12, like the God rest its soul, but the Pac-12, remember, Pac-12 stacked, though it was like 5 weeks in a row. The Pac-12 like stacked those games, right? Like Florida, the ACC used to kind of protect Florida State and Clemson by not putting it on like September 10th. You remember?
Right.
Like, you know, Florida and Tennessee back in the early 2000s, that was like the gripe with it, right? It was like, we decided the SEC East on like December 21st. This sucks.
That's why USC was always so pissed off at Larry Scott, is like they would have like their two toughest games of the season, and they'd have like a fucking Friday night road game before their toughest conference opponent or something. Like it happened a lot. USC fans know what I'm talking about. Last thing I'll say, shout out to our friends at Duke's, because there's a pattern and a model here as we move back towards that playoff incentivizing thing. Remember my whole spiel about the G5 a couple episodes? They get one, M&M. You get one shot, okay? You're going to get that 12 seed that I talked about, right? And that's going to be your little mercy, sort of take it and be happy. You guys are also going to have to stand out amongst like 100 odd teams to earn that one bid in. One of the cool things that that Duke's has done and will do is that they're scheduling games where it's like App ECU, and they're building it out with an experience that's more G5 centric in the way they're seating everybody in the lower bowl. They don't necessarily have to fill it up. You can take a model like that in week one, and I can rattle off 15 to 20 G5 schools where this makes sense, right? Or if I'm just honestly, and I'll leave it at this, not just to stump for neutral sites, because I feel like I've been doing that a lot this episode, although they might be the necessary evil that the purists won't admit. Dude, if I'm San Diego State and I'm looking at this now, I'm calling the best American team I can, and I'm figuring out a week one, 1-1 right now. So Tulane, San Diego State, Boise, Memphis. Like this, Boise's always good about this. Like Boise's fearless, but that's going to have to be an emphasis moving forward for these G5s, so that they can lock in and play really. Like we need five more Georgia Southern Boises.
Like Boise and Memphis, I think they had a series in the last couple of years, didn't they?
Yeah, but financially, there's like there used to be not great returns, and the advantage a neutral site gives you is the money, which is one, you don't have to worry about 2 years worth of scheduling. Two, it's an automatic payout. We're going to worry about selling the tickets. And then we just got to get your fan bases to come. I will say this emphatically, that I know like App fans, Georgia Southern fans, Boise fans, they will travel. There is a quotient of the, and by the way, if you give like UTSA will travel. If you give North Texas something to care about, they will travel. Like you can do this at scale at neutral sites for G5s, and then give them a resume builder when it comes time to like, dude, if I'm Liberty, and I shouldn't encourage Liberty to do anything, I'm calling Dukes and I'm saying, hey, get us a game with App State or get us a game with Coastal in Charlotte on a Thursday night opening weekend, because that'll be something that can knock them above, you know, because the CUSA schedule is probably not going to be great.
Hey, did you guys see that Ryan Silverfield got an extension from Memphis?
You'll be okay.
This is why we put you on the
coaching
shows.
This happened in the last week.
You're going to be okay.
Since we've last recorded.
This is why we put you on the coaching shows.
I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. He earned it. Did he? Did he? Did he?